unfasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Welcome into the Eric Ainge Show, Cumulus Media Production. Appreciate everybody tuning in to us, no matter where you're listening, streaming, listening to us here in Knoxville, listening to us in the Tri-Cities, on the Sports Monster. Doesn't matter. We appreciate you tuning in here to the EA Show. Brian Rice, my co-host, each and every day here on the EA Show. We are broadcasting from our homes, practicing social distancing and everything that our president and governor are asking us to do. But we're still bringing you the EA Show, brought to you by Mortgage Investors Group each and every day. Brian, how are we today, man?
Doing great. Looking forward to being joined by Ryan Callahan of GoVols 24/7 coming up here at 10:30. Talk Tennessee's latest commit and the Vols on commitment watch today as well. And then Randy Sanders, ETSU football head coach, your former offensive coordinator, coming up at 11:15.
Yeah, man, can't wait to have Coach Sanders on here today as well.
So looking forward to that. The NCAA yesterday officially announced that spring sports athletes are getting an extra year of eligibility. Schools will not be required to provide the same level of scholarship for seniors that would have been graduated and moved on, but they do get their year of eligibility back. All spring sport athletes of all classes get this year back. So basically, they all got a red shirt.
Okay, so for those of you listening that don't know this, Brian Rice, you are the voice of Lady Vol softball for the University of Tennessee through the Vol Radio Network. Tell me what you think about this, because you are Mr. Spring Sports, and you are very involved with Ralph and Karen Weekly and the Lady Vol softball team. So what do you think?
Well, it was everything that you needed done. I would have preferred that they said schools had to do it, but I also understand why they didn't, because there was a lot of opposition financially to doing this in college sports. I would have loved if all the votes had been made public, because you could tell what schools and conferences actually value their athletes. This was the right thing to do for spring sports athletes. Now, we'll discuss coming up, you know, why basketball players and other winter sport athletes that didn't get a chance to play for a championship didn't get it back, and whether that's right or wrong. But I think this was the only right thing to do by your athletes. Give them the year back and let them start again. Now, there will be a lot of athletes that don't take advantage of this. There are softball players that have been, you know, admitted to grad school. There are track and field athletes that have jobs lined up. There are rowers that have medical school to go to. I mean, I'm just thinking of a couple of specific examples I know of senior athletes at UT. So we'll see. Now, if they can go to grad school and play sports, then they will. They'll be able to. But, you know, if you're making a decision whether to take a job that you know is there this year that may not be in a year, it'll be a decision to make. So I don't think everybody's going to take advantage of the extra year, because, again, this extra year doesn't just apply to this year's seniors. It's everybody getting their year back. You know, if you were a sophomore this year, you're going to be a sophomore next year. That's going to affect some people for years to come, because, again, they're going to get to the end of their spring sport career and say, all right, well, I have my degree. I could come back and play for another year. I could delay graduation. I could start grad school, but if you're on a partial scholarship, grad school is going to be prohibitively expensive in a lot of cases. So there's a lot to unpack on it, but the good news is the scholarships for seniors next year won't count against the scholarship limits. So the NCAA is going to allow these athletes to come back without sports having to make cuts to other athletes that they had promised.
And I think that's huge. So you get to continue to recruit all the kids that you were recruiting. You don't have to have anybody lose their senior year or lose a year period. I mean, gosh, how sad would that be for our catcher on our women's softball team?
Yeah, Karen Weekly brought it up the last time we spoke to her. Allie Shipman lost all but 22 games last year to a knee injury. Well, she played, I believe, now depending on how you calculate it, with an exhibition game against the Mexico national team and two unfinished games, she played about 22 games again this year. So she's missed more than half the season, two straight years. To have not given her this year back would have meant that she would have played less than a full season, and she would be,
and she'd
a junior.
Be a junior. Yeah, that's crazy. So they did the right thing. They did it. They also gave the schools that need the get-out-of-jail-free card, they gave them the get-out-of-jail-free card. You don't have to pay. I mean, what if you have a senior class that you can't wait to get out of there because you had a coaching change and they just aren't bought in and they don't want to do it the right way, and you've only got a few of them left, and they don't want to be there anyway. Like, now that school does not have to pay for those girls to come back if they don't want to. Or if you just, your athletic director's telling you, sorry, you need to tell the girls that they need to figure out their own way financially if they're a senior
budgeted,
to come back.
Yeah, we've budgeted X amount for scholarships, whether it's up to the limit or not. Because a lot of schools, here's the thing that a lot of people don't know. A lot of mid-major schools do not fully fund their spring sports programs. You can have 11.7 baseball scholarships, but that doesn't necessarily mean that every school, particularly in mid-majors, is actually giving out 11.7 scholarships. That's kind of an unknown thing that a lot of people don't know, but it's going to be something that they're going to have to pay attention to going forward, because those are the kinds of schools that were opposed to this. Those are the kinds of schools that now don't have to do it. And there are going to be some uncomfortable conversations to be had. I do think, though, that athletes that would have had an extra year and would have been seniors are going to have an opportunity to play somewhere if their original school says, we can't offer you the scholarship. That transfer portal for seniors is going to be extremely eventful, I think.
Yeah, I could see that happening as well. But bottom line is the NCAA, they took it off themselves, which I think was smart. They didn't have some people that aren't every day bought into the spring sports and the coaches and athletic directors. They put it on the schools and the conferences. They all got together. They had their information. They probably Zoomed to have these conversations and got her done. Ultimately, I think this was handled very, very well. Yes, it's going to help some of the bigger schools more than it's going to help some of the smaller schools potentially, but it also has given anyone that wants to do the right thing with their spring sports scholarship, half scholarship, full scholarship players, it's giving them the opportunity to allow them to not just get this year taken from them. And you know what, Brian, I thought about it more and more yesterday after because we had kind of talked about it a little bit. And I was like, you know what, how many people are losing their businesses right now? How many people are losing their jobs right now? It wouldn't be unfair for a college athlete to lose a year right now, because a lot of people are losing a lot. So if that's how that would have gone down, we had a caller that said that kind of yesterday, and you know, part of me when he said it, I went, ooh, I don't like how that sounds, so I'm going to disagree with that. But then I started thinking about it, and I was like, good for that. You know, if they actually vote this thing through, good for them, because their job is to represent the student athletes, and with all the money that comes into each and one every one of these schools, and with all the uncertainty, they still have the chance to do the right thing. It doesn't mean it's the fair or unfair thing. I think it would have just been the right thing. I think it was the right thing to do, and they did it. And ultimately, I don't know that I would have judged them if they didn't, with everything that people are losing right now. So good on them for doing the right thing for their student athletes in this time of uncertainty.
Do you have a problem with them not giving the year back to the winter sports athletes?
Well, I mean, that's a conversation worth having. I mean, the difference is, you played less than a third of the season for some spring sports, and some spring sports hadn't got started, and you played some winter sports the entire season. For some teams, they were done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, for just about everybody. I mean, you're at conference tournament time for men's and women's basketball. Indoor track and field athletes were literally at their NCAA championship when it was called off. They had already played their conference or ran their conference meets. Same thing for swimming. They were a week away from swimming and diving, and Tennessee had a good chance to win a national championship. Didn't have the opportunity, but yeah, their entire regular season for every winter sport was done. Gymnastics and basketball didn't get to have conference tournaments, and then all of those sports didn't get to have NCAA championships. But I think that is one of those, I wish they could have done something, but realistically, I don't think they should have. And they didn't.
No, and they ultimately didn't. So I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. You know, as much crap as we give the NCAA all the time, Brian, I kind of think that they've handled all of this stuff that's happened with the current pandemic in our country and everything that COVID-19 and coronavirus has brought to our country. The NCAA, I think, has actually done a very, very good job. Overall, I might even give them an A.
Yeah, and this, as we mentioned yesterday, is the schools voting on it. It's the schools and the conferences and the Student Athlete Advisory Committee. They are all getting together and voting on this. It's not something that people that work for the NCAA full-time are getting together and just deciding for everybody. It's the schools getting together on a conference call and the conferences getting together on a conference call and making recommendations and voting on them. And so I think it is important to note that it's not just people arbitrarily making decisions. These are the schools. We rip on the NCAA, but the NCAA is the schools. They're the ones that make the decisions. They're the ones that propose legislation. Yeah, when enforcement comes down, you're relying on them to make some decisions, and you're empowering some people to do that. But ultimately, it's the member schools that make the rules, and they're the ones that they continue to carry this thing forward.
100%.
So 656-9900 if you want to join us on the Eric Ains Show. Coming up, updated conference title odds. I don't think any of them are going to be a surprise to us. How big of a long shot some teams are may actually be a bigger surprise than who the actual favorites are. That's coming up next. 656-9900 if you want to join us on the Eric Ains Show. The favorite to win the ACC next year.
Shocker.
You have to bet $6 to win one. They are a 1-6 favorite. Miami at 15-2 is second. North Carolina at 10-1 is third. Florida State in its first year under Mike Norvell is a 16-1 odds to win the ACC.
That of the Power Five conferences, I think, is probably the most guaranteed conference champion is probably Clemson out of the ACC. Would you not agree with that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the odds,
I mean, Oklahoma in the Big 12, Ohio State in the Big 10, right behind it. But even then, not as home run as Clemson out of the ACC.
Yeah, the number two on the list is Ohio State. They are a 4-9 favorite to win the Big Ten. Michigan second at 7-2. Oklahoma a 4-5 favorite to win the Big 12. So you have to bet five to win four. So not as big not nearly as big. There's a pretty big gap there. Now when you get down to the SEC, Alabama the same 5-6. To win the league. LSU comes in second at 11-4, Georgia third at 3-1. Tennessee in the SEC has the seventh best odds. They're 66-1 to win the SEC.
So that puts us behind Florida and Georgia in the East, and that's probably it in the East, correct?
Yes.
And then in the West, yeah, that they're saying if we're number seven, then they're saying Alabama, LSU, and Auburn would be your next three there, probably, correct?
And then Texas A&M.
And then Texas A&M. So, but we would come in then Texas A&M and then us. So there's four teams in the West, two teams in the East.
Yes, Texas A&M is a 16-1 favorite, and then there's that huge gap back to Tennessee at 66-1.
Whoa.
So, hey, good value bet.
I mean, I don't. I mean, that's right where we finished in the league last year, is it not? I mean, it was us. It was seven, and the way that we kind of we talked about it all year last year was you have Florida and Georgia in the East, and you have Alabama, LSU, or LSU, Alabama, and Auburn in the West. And then I kind of thought that the next tier down was Texas A&M and Tennessee, kind of by themselves. It's like you have Florida and Georgia that are playing in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party or whatever we call that or don't call that now. But that's the game that's determined who's going to be the front runner for the East here the last couple years. And I think is still probably safe to say this year. The game that will determine that. It's nice knowing Tennessee gets to play Georgia in November instead of having to play them in September. But I do think that ultimately you have three or four teams in the West and two teams for sure in the East that I think you would put ahead of everybody. You might even just say LSU and Alabama in the West. But Auburn returns a lot. They lose a lot on defense, but they still have a lot of guys coming back. And you're talking about losing a few really good players off of a top 10 defense in the country. So it's not like they were just okay on defense and they lose their best player. I mean, they were elite on defense and they do lose their couple best players. But they have, you know, everybody else returning and some other really good young talent. They've recruited very well there as well. So the early look at the Southeastern Conference, I don't think is much different than it finished last year at the end of 2019. I think it's kind of the same as it finished last year.
Yeah, it ends up, even though a lot of the talent changes, the sheer numbers remain, you know, essentially the same. I don't expect LSU to go undefeated again next year.
No,
but I do think they will still be in the thick of it. And Alabama has a lot of questions. You know, they're replacing Tua, who they had to play part of the season without last year. Does Mac Jones get that job? We've mentioned it before with skipping spring practice hurts the most. Alabama's got a lot of questions. LSU has a lot of questions. I think that's why you see in these odds for the SEC teams like Georgia and Florida at 3-1 and 6-1 respectively are right there, because I don't think the odds makers are as confident that Alabama and LSU will just be able to figure it out with new quarterbacks. Georgia has a new quarterback as well, but he's a guy who's a grad transfer who has played very well at Wake Forest. How does he mesh with the system? I think it's a lot easier to get a guy like that to mesh with the system than it is, you know, somebody who may have been in the program for a couple of years but hasn't done it, at least from an odds-making standpoint.
Yeah.
And then Auburn's right there at 14-1 behind Florida. The strength of Florida and Auburn is they return starting quarterbacks who had a lot of success last year. And I think you're talking about a quarterback building on a great freshman year.
Yeah, building on a really good freshman year, especially. I mean, don't forget this kid won the Iron Bowl in his freshman year. Beat Oregon, a team that going into conference championship week was still in the mix to be that number four team, with Utah potentially, or Oklahoma or Baylor. I mean, there was kind of that Pac-12, Big 12, whoever wins it and how they win it, depending on who wins, could end up being in the mix there. So I think that Auburn and Florida, like you just said, I think they're actually very similar teams, and I think they're both underdogs considering who the team is that's ahead of them or teams that are ahead of them in their division. I mean, this has a chance to be like last year, but I think that you could even see it more even. This could be the top seven teams in this conference, Tennessee included in that, as the number seven team, which I agree with the odds makers on this one, but I think you could have more of a 1-7. The difference between the seven teams is not as much as you might think, to whereas last year, I mean, you had one team that produced arguably the best college football season in college football history. I mean, let's not forget what LSU did last year. That was the single greatest, in my opinion, that was the single greatest college football season that I've ever seen. So in my lifetime, that is for sure Ed Orgeron and Joe Burrow and all those All-Americans and first-round draft picks out there running around, guys leaving early, going to the draft. That was the best college football season I've ever seen. You know, if Tua's not injured, You know, what are they able to do? How does that end up going down? They still were incredible last year. Alabama was. You know, Auburn was able to beat them in the Iron Bowl because of some of those things. You know, Texas A&M is, I think, a 7-5 team like Tennessee was. You're kind of sitting there going, well, they're 7-5, but they've lost to some really, really good football teams. You know, Texas A&M, you're going, okay, this is actually a pretty dang good football team. They have a first-round draft pick defensive tackle, an offensive tackle, a quarterback that played pretty clean football there, especially towards the middle end of the year. They got a lot of positive things going on. Poor Jimbo Fisher. I shouldn't say that. No one should ever really feel bad for Jimbo. But Jimbo Fisher, though, at Texas A&M is sitting there looking at the rest of his division going, my gosh. It's kind of like us this year, Tennessee football. You go, okay, you know, people ask me what we could be, and I go, well, if we win all the games that we should win, we're 8-4. If we win all the games that we're going to get picked to win, I mean, at most, it'll be 8-4 because four losses this year just means you lost to four top 10 football teams.
Right.
Because Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and Oklahoma, you bet your bottom dollar, those are all legitimate top 10 football teams right now. So how good is Tennessee? Well, I don't know. I mean, if they go 9-3 this year, that means they're a top 15 football team. In the country at 9-3. I mean, Jimbo goes 7-5, and he's a barely, you know, on the cusp of the top 25 teams. But you look at the teams that he's losing to for the most part, and you go, well, my gosh.
Ryan Callahan of GoVols 24/7 joins us coming up on the other side on the Eric Ains Show. Picking up a commitment yesterday, and you're on commitment watch again today.
Yeah, I know. Never a dull moment, even during a dead period where there's really no end in sight for when recruits will be able to resume taking visits. This is kind of an example of, hard to say how much the uncertainty here is playing into this, but for some players, I think it could be that, you know, some guys have been certainly eager to take some additional visits to schools, and as they get closer to decisions and you know, not being sure that they're going to get to take any more visits until, you know, maybe June or July, perhaps even later. I think that's leading to some guys committing. And you know, Jalen Wright, the running back from North Carolina, kind of cited a little bit of that yesterday in explaining why he decided to go ahead and commit to Tennessee just a few weeks after he visited there for the first time for the Vols' latest junior day. It's a nice pickup for Tennessee, kind of an under-the-radar find that I think might be a guy who – gets a good number of offers in the coming months, and honestly, he's one of the types of players who might really be affected by there not being a spring evaluation period if there indeed is not. You know, obviously, a lot of schools closed. Not sure college coaches will be cleared to go back on the road for the April and May evaluation period. And he's the type of guy that if schools had seen him, you know, he's still in the single digits in terms of offers. He might have blown up to a 20-25 offer guy this spring. Got great speed. A guy Tennessee sort of prioritized since they offered him in early February. So a nice pickup there, but kind of an example of the uncertainty and how it's affecting some guys. And as you said, another guy that we know is announcing a decision today, Walker Merrill, an in-state wide receiver from over at Brentwood High School, just outside Nashville, announcing today between, looks like, Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt are the main contenders there. He had put out a top seven last week, and he's a longtime Tennessee target, had an offer for about a year now and has visited a few times since then. So Tennessee in good shape there, it looks like, and perhaps in position to land a second commitment in as many days.
Talking with Ryan Callahan from GoVols 247, thanks to Henley Roofing Company, henleyroofing.net. Callie, that's, you know, one of the things that Brian and I were talking about today was the kids that will be impacted by not getting this camp time, this spring evaluation period, all the different things that they're going to miss from a recruitment standpoint. But yet these kids still, you know, they haven't changed their minds. A lot of them still want to decide where they're going to go before they start their senior year of school. How important is it right now to have been in on the kids you want early and to identify prospects? Like you just said, Ole Miss, Vandy, Tennessee could have blown up, but we will never know. How important is it to have identified the players that you want in this class and be in on them early?
Yeah, I think that is a big deal, and we're going to see that more than ever this year. Another thing I'll be interested in seeing, if it's sort of a result of this extended dead period or potentially extended dead period, is, you know, colleges kind of have more time to go back, and since they're not going to be able to go back out on the road, they now have more time to go sort of in-depth on some film on some guys. So I wonder if we will see, sort of in line with what you're thinking, some, you know, a higher number of offers to some kids nationally by this spring. Now, Tennessee has always been pretty aggressive. This staff, as well as the previous staff, they've always been pretty aggressive in offering kids early. And I think that's one thing that's going to help Tennessee here. And this obviously, you know, we've talked about it before, but the longer this dead period extends, and the longer it is until players can visit schools again, the more it's going to benefit those schools that have already gotten kids on campus. So I always say it's some of the most underrated visits in recruiting are when players are going to games during their junior year or going to camps going into their junior year. That's a critical year for players to sort of lay the groundwork for the teams that they might be looking at, even though they might get a bunch more offers after that. Sometimes that changes things, but sometimes those teams that got them on campus earlier are the ones they're looking at the rest of the time. And I think that, you know, Jalen Wright is a good example of that. It didn't happen until a month ago, but Tennessee got him on campus in early March, and he ends up committing a few weeks later. So those early visits, long before the summer and fall of a player's senior year, really are important, and this year is going to make those even more important because of the shortened calendar that it looks like they're going to have to take visits before signing day.
Ryan, Tennessee also got a second commitment yesterday. It was not a scholarship player, but it's somebody who's going to enroll right away as part of this class, and that is Isaiah Gaddy. He's a guy who blew up early, but then his offer list tailed off over the last year. What can you tell me about Gaddy and what kind of player Tennessee is getting here?
Well, it's a really nice pickup, I think, for a walk-on, and you know, going into Philadelphia to get a walk-on, you don't see that too often. So give Tennessee some credit here, led by Joe Ossoff, that's the tight ends coach, who I've kind of said all along, I wouldn't be surprised if he has as much of an impact as any of Tennessee's newcomers on staff. I guess technically newcomers, being a promoted member of the on-field staff now, but what he's done in the Northeast in particular so far, pretty impressive. He helped get a big group of kids from Philadelphia on campus at Tennessee for their latest junior day a few weeks ago, and then you see them, you know, laying the groundwork to get a walk-on from Philadelphia, a guy that, as you said, had several scholarship offers early in the process, even though his recruitment died down a bit, and clearly those teams that offered were not heavily involved in recent months. That's still a sign that this is a kid who has some ability, that maybe this ends up being a nice steal for Tennessee, a guy who perhaps could contribute, and certainly in a position of need. Outside linebacker is where he's projected to play, 6'2", 225, so good size, and has the sort of the pedigree of a guy who was at least good enough to get some early looks from schools like Texas A&M and NC State. So that's a nice pickup, and to be able to convince a guy to go somewhere that's not just down the road, to go from Philadelphia all the way to Tennessee, you know, certainly he's intrigued by the chance to play in the SEC and sort of prove himself, and sounds like he's kind of got a chip on his shoulder looking to prove people wrong and overcome what he's kind of viewed as a setback in the recruiting process, but obviously is excited to just have a chance to still play for a major program.
Talking with Ryan Callahan from GoVols 247, thanks to Henley Roofing Company, henleyroofing.net. Callie, we don't know where this thing is going to go, what the pandemic in our country and where it's headed and all that uncertainty. Grade where Tennessee's at as we sit here today, knowing that everyone's in the same boat, and how you think we're faring for this 2021 class. Obviously, when it's so early, there's so much conjecture and different directions that it could go, but how are they doing overall with this class, and where do you think it's headed?
Yeah, I think you have to give them at least a solid B or B plus for what they've done so far, if nothing else, because they're good in terms of numbers. They're off to a very good start, actually, just in terms of having this class sort of building up size-wise sooner than usual, because Tennessee often has to wait a little bit longer into the spring or even the summer before it's approaching double-digit commitments. They're already at 8 right now, and as we touched on a minute ago, could be at 9 today if they can land Walker Merrill. So that's a pretty impressive start for where Tennessee usually is. Now, you don't have the quarterback in this class, and that's the one thing that you always like to have early, and that's something they may have to wait on until the summer. We'll see about that, but yeah, they've addressed some needs already, got an edge rusher in the class, a defensive lineman, and gotten some secondary help. And then yesterday, another running back in Jalen Wright to go along with an athlete in Elijah Howard who looks like he might play running back too, or at least has a chance to. So you've got some interesting pieces in this class already, and certainly still need to add some star power, you know, land some other big fish you've been after for months. But this is a good start, and certainly having a head start on some other teams in terms of that commitment total, I think it benefits you in a year like this where you're maybe not having to scramble this summer to get the commitment total where you want it to be going into the season, because ideally you'd like to have half or more of your class sort of filled up before the start of the football season at the very least.
Ryan, last thing for you. We'll get you out of here. Appreciate your time in quarantine. But if the summer camp circuit doesn't happen because of travel restrictions or just because of the uncertainty, how is that going to affect not just this coming class but the next two classes if teams can't get them on campus and services can't get them into camps to evaluate them and put that film out there?
Yeah, you know, as much as the recruiting camps you're talking about, the Under Armour opening regionals that would have happened this spring, things like that, you know, it's the college camps. Those are a really big deal, and where Tennessee hands out a good number of offers, you know, sort of getting their own chance to get a private evaluation of guys is at their own camps, just like a lot of schools out there. And not having those camps to evaluate guys going into their junior year or even sophomore year, it puts you behind a little bit. So, that's a critical part of the schedule, and Jeremy Pruitt's always emphasized the importance of camping with a lot of players that he recruits. So I certainly think that would be a bit of a blow for everybody in the evaluation process, for players in finding the right schools and for schools in finding the right players for them. So I do think this is something that's going to lead to a pretty wild year if it does end up wiping out the camp season. You're going to see a lot of teams probably reassessing their evaluations throughout the fall, because this fall could be, you know, assuming there is a football season, it could be their first chance to see some of these guys play in person and really at all in a year, essentially. So you're going to see guys who've changed or not gotten better, and that's going to lead to some changes of opinion and maybe a lot of decommitments. You know, it could be a pretty chaotic year, and that's why I think you see some guys right now saying, I want to go ahead and claim my spot if I like a school and feel like I have a good idea of where I want to go. So it's going to lead to a lot of uncertainty, and evaluations this summer are a big part of what coaches would like to have and what players would like to have.
What do you guys have coming up at GoVols 24/7 before we chat with you again next Tuesday?
Well, as you said, you know, we'll have full coverage of Walker Merrill's announcement as we track that one early this afternoon. That's scheduled to happen around 1 o'clock Eastern time. So we'll have that covered for you on GoVols 24/7. Today's a fun day on the site because it's free VIP day. So any of our VIP content is actually open to everybody. It's sort of a chance to preview the site, and we'll be following that up with a special tomorrow to give everyone a chance to join in and get more of that. But today, everything on the site is basically open to everybody. So come check it out. And that's team recruiting coverage, basketball, tons of stuff going on, even though we're still in this uncertain period with not a lot of sports obviously being played.
A great time to check it out, Ryan. We always appreciate your time each Tuesday.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
And that's Ryan Callahan of GoVols 24/7. His appearance brought to you each week by Henley Roofing.
HenleyRoofing.net. If you have a commercial property, even if this is just top of mind, even if you're not looking at doing it right now, whenever you are looking at doing it, they're the go-to commercial roofing and re-roofing company here in East Tennessee. Doesn't matter where it's at. Make sure you get a quote from them because they're the best. They're the GOATs. Been around for over 55 years. HenleyRoofing.net.
The Eric Haines Show continues next.
In every single day that's happening, it's not live score updates, but there's all the responses and all the things that are going on with everything going on. Never a shortage of topics, and it's one of the reasons why we're including a bunch of interviews with people, relevant people, and you'll get to catch up with our first one of those this week anyway, to here in a little bit with Randy Sanders.
Yeah, everything is everything's continuing other than the game, so there's still plenty to talk about. There's still plenty going on. Shaq had to go on and defend his appearance on Tiger King, which I'm not sure Tiger King is a phenomenon if we all have, you know, normal lives right now. But we've all been stuck inside, so we all have to find one thing to watch. And that's, I think, one of the things about sports is it is something that we can all watch together in real time and all talk about and all know about. And I think that's one of the things that brings people together with sports. Well, that's why Tiger King is a thing. We needed something to all come together and watch, and so unfortunately we picked a show like that. But you know, it's things are continuing to happen. Things are continuing to watch. You know, the NBA may get back to the 16-team playoff by quarantining everybody somewhere. Well, why do they want to do that? Well, the ratings for this weekend came up. The highest-rated sports-related program this weekend was NASCAR Simulated iRacing, drew 1.3 million viewers.
And we talked about it yesterday. 200,000 plus never watched NASCAR before.
Yeah, 200,000 plus of the 900,000 that watched the first one. They haven't broken down new viewers. But yesterday's, they went from 900,000 to 1.3 million viewers in a week for drivers having a virtual race. That's why these leagues want to get back, because they've seen, okay, well, NASCAR is going to be okay through this. You're getting numbers that aren't the same as what they were getting for a real race. It's just over a third of what they would get for a real race on a normal weekend. But there is the demand there. People want the product. So I think the NBA has now gone into overdrive trying to figure out how they can have a postseason. I wouldn't be surprised if the NHL did the same. Now, obviously, there are fewer places that you can put down ice than there are a basketball court. But these leagues that are going to start to explore this, let's just quarantine everybody involved and go from there. Now, I think that's going to be a good plan.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening with this. And it's kind of why NASCAR, if you remember, they were one of the last ones to cancel anything. They were kind of saying, "Hey, business as usual. We're gonna race, no fans, but we're racing, guys." And they were, you know, they took some heat for that as everything changed, and it just has all changed so fast that you can't even get mad at them for it. But I think they kind of knew that this was going to be the case. Hey, if we're the only thing going on, we're the only thing going on.
Yeah, they're the only thing going, and they're going to keep rolling on with this virtual racing until the real racing starts. Coming up in the next hour of the Eric Haines Show, Randy Sanders joins us at 11:15, but we start off with Florida, Alabama, or Georgia next. This is the Eric Haines Show.